The following audio is from the weekly message at Summit Church in the upstate of South Carolina. More information is available at summitupstate.org.
Well, happy Mother's Day. I was sitting here thinking, some of you guys might remember this, but back in the day, we would, on Mother's Day, we would hand out carnations to the mothers. And I'm not saying we can't bring that back. We can. But we would also give gifts out. And we'd give gifts out to the youngest mama, the oldest mama, the mama with the most kids. And we had a lady in our church in Greenwood that qualified for two of those gifts. She was the oldest and she had the most kids. And she would not come to church. She wouldn't come for Easter. She wouldn't come for Christmas. But she would be there for Mother's Day, and we might just bring it back. I don't know, but I am thankful. I'm thankful for moms. I'm thankful for my wife, my mom, my mother-in-law, two special grandmothers that love the Lord. But it was, as we were thinking about Miss Betty this morning, I was thinking about a lady. Her name's Stella Evans, and there is no blood relationship that she had with me, but she was just as special as any grandmother ever had. She was a lady in our church in Charleston, and she pretty much adopted me and my brother very early on, and and the point of this is, and I want you to hear this morning, you don't have to have a baby to be a spiritual mother, right? Like, there is opportunity all around us to mother, and I pray for Summit Church that we would be a church that looked that way. What a legacy Miss Betty leaves. What a picture of faithfulness and what it looks like to mother. So the message today is for anybody who feels the weight, who feels the responsibility of equipping an infant, equipping a child, equipping a teenager, equipping a student for life, which should be all of us. In some way, in some form. I was praying this morning, even before this morning, just and where we would land today. It's dangerous to give a Southern Baptist free rein to just preach whatever he wants to preach, especially on Mother's Day. I know you're trying to get to restaurants, but I was thinking, you know, that when we look at parenting, we don't have a whole lot to go by. We've got a lot of dysfunctional families to go by in the Bible. We don't have any great examples, but we do have Jesus. And John 13, 34 says this. He offers this new covenant command. And it's simply this, that we would love others as Jesus has loved us. So simple. And this love, this Jesus brand love that is being commanded to us, I guess the question becomes, what does it look like? And I believe the Apostle Paul, he gives us some love handles to say in which we can grab on to. You like that? Took me 2 weeks to come up with that. So, and I didn't think you would laugh, but how about that? It all worked out. Oh, we needed that, didn't we? But he's talking to a church that's really struggling, right? There's disunity, there's fighting. So he describes this love that behaves under pressure. He describes a love that behaves under pressure in the circles of life, in our homes, in our workplaces, in the place that God has sovereignly placed us. And these words, I think so many times we read them and we think that Paul's at a wedding. He's not. But I don't want us to look past them. I was reading this week. This was said by a child psychiatrist, and I want you to listen to these words, and I want you to put them in the back of your head as we go back through these next few verses. But this is what he said: your parents' behavior, not their advice, not their parenting skills, determine whether or not you would want to be like them or even with them when you were old enough to choose for yourself. Whew. I'm going to read that again. Your parents' behavior, not their advice, not their parenting skills, determine whether or not you would want to be like them or even with them when you are old enough to choose for yourself. It's interesting because I remember years back, I was riding to the Spartanburg Athletic Club, and I was listening to Focus on the Family, and they had Dr. Dobson was on there. And this lady was just, she was hysterical, she was broken, she was on the phone. And this is what she said. She said, "I don't understand." She said, we have raised our children in a house that goes to church. My husband's a pastor. We've been at church. Anytime the doors have been open, we've been involved. We pray with our kids. We read the Bible with our kids. I don't understand. Both of my children, she said, have gone rogue. They've walked away from the Lord. And my heart's broken. She said, "I need some insight." And this is what he said, and it's grabbed me ever since then. He said, can I ask you a question? He said, "How is your relationship with your husband?" She goes, "Well, it's good. We've been in ministry for 30 years, and she kept going back to the ministry thing. He said, "You're not answering the question." He said, "How is your relationship with your spouse?" She said, "Well, it's busy. It's busy." And he said, "That's not it." And he stopped her, and he said, "This is what I know. I've been doing this a long time, and I have a lot of friends and pastors that I'm acquainted with. And this happens all the time." He said, "What I see is there's a fracture in the relationship. And it affects the eyes that are watching." And it's really just kind of I've watched and I paid attention through the years, and there's some truth here. But with that being said, we're not going to do the whole, because of time, but I want to start here in verse 4. Love is patient. Why does Paul have to start with patience? Right? I noticed this morning I was coming down 85. I have a lot more patience on Sunday than I do on Monday. But it's a crazy thing, because when we think of patience, I know I don't have much patience, but what patience shows is that there's something going, when I don't have it, there's a self-centeredness in me, right? There's something going on in me, and this is what's the crazy thing when it comes to parenting is there's this clash of wills of epic proportion, right? Because what's happening in that moment is there is self-centeredness that's coming at each other. It doesn't take long. Like if you've had a child, or we've all been children, the moment you come into the world, there is this agenda that it's your agenda, right? Many of you have recently had babies. We are growing. But I remember when Easton was born, I remember being at the hospital after he had been born. It was great. It's great. For like 2 days, they're just catering to you. They bring you the precious baby to hold, but as soon as it starts crying, they take it away, and they change the diaper, and they're feeding it. They're doing all the stuff. And then there comes the day where they hand you the baby, and you're trying to figure out how to put him in the car seat, and they're waving goodbye, and you're thinking, "Oh my, what have we done?" because there's this self-centeredness that comes out. And what we see in those insecurities and angers and fears and all those manifestations of self-preservation and reputation is this rub. We would have to agree, at least I would say, that it's easier for me to give people advice on how to raise their kids than it is for me to raise my own kids. Because that doesn't reflect on me, right? Listen to this definition of patience. I think it's great. Patience is to move at another person's pace. Patience is to move at another person's pace. Do you know who has great patience? You know who's got great patience? Grandparents. They rock it, right? They really do. My dad had no patience. It's where I get mine from. But let me tell you something. The moment he had a grandson, I'm like, who is this guy? He would walk with the boys with so much patience. Grammy doesn't care what you do to the house. You can paint it, you can take crackers, and you can rub it into the carpet. Because she has patience. This love that Paul is describing here is a love that chooses to move at another person's pace rather than requiring that person to move at our pace. And why is it so hard? It's hard because it's not natural. God moved at our pace, so we are to do the same with others that we're in relationship with, especially our children, especially the children that we influence, especially the children that we have take part in their lives. We must insist at moving at their pace and not our pace. Because let me tell you something, if you do not, you will separate yourselves from the relationship. You will. You will push them beyond their capacity. You will separate and you will frustrate. Paul goes on to tell us in another letter, don't provoke them, dads. Don't provoke the children. Don't stir them up. Don't insist on winning. Don't make sure you're the guy that always wins. I do that. Like, I'm not going to let them win. Don't push hard because you will discourage and they will become disheartened and they will lose motivation. And I get it, because I know some of you are saying here, well, you don't know my kids. If I don't push my kids, if we don't expect more of them than they expected themselves, if we don't ensure and we don't reach, if we don't do this, they will not reach their maximum potential. They may not turn out the way, fill in the blank, the way that we want them to. One of the things over the last 20 years, as I've been in practice, I was thinking, isn't it a crazy thing to say you practice medicine or you practice something? It's kind of a scary thought, but especially if I'm cracking your neck. I'm just practicing. But one of the things that I've done, I had the opportunity to work with a lot of athletes, young athletes, and speak to a lot of athletes, and it's really discouraging because you get to a senior year in high school or you even get to a point where they're playing in college, and they're done. Like, they're done. They've been living this dream out for a parent for years, and they've been doing all these things, and they're tired of it. Sarah and I were talking this week. Wouldn't it be better to discover what our kids were actually born to do and facilitate that, as opposed to forcing them to be who we are? And what would it look like as a parent that's an athlete that looks at a kid and says, hey, man, as much as I love baseball, man, you are gifted in art. And you're gifted in music. What would it look like if I facilitated that? I was listening to a pastor this week. It's great advice. His son was getting ready to graduate from high school, has no idea what he wants to do with his life, but he's going to college. And he said, I was thinking selfishly at first because I didn't want to spend all this money and just send him to college and say, okay, well, What am I spending my money on? So he went to him and he said, listen, son, would you allow me to help you? Help you. I'm not going to tell you what direction to go, but let me help you with some ideas that I think from a class standpoint that will prepare you for whatever that is. And when you make the decision that you know what you want to be, then I'll step back and let you go with it. And he said it worked out beautiful. His child had no idea what he wanted to do. He put him in some business classes, and the next thing you know, he's a lawyer. But my responsibility as a parent, or even in any child that I have influences, to put my weight behind what they might want to be as a child, what they decide to do with their life. And I could keep going, but love is patient. Love is not pushy. It doesn't drive a wedge. It doesn't allow ego and reputation to dictate the tone or the pace of the relationship. Listen to this one. Love is what? What's next? It's kind. Now, I don't know about y'all, but I think the word kind sounds a little soft. When I was in the ninth grade, so when I was in school, seventh to ninth grade was intermediate, and then you went to high school from 10th to 12th. So ninth grade was kind of like a senior, but you're not a senior, but you know how that goes. But they gave out those, what do you call the things? The superlative, that's it. And I remember in the ninth grade, I got most kind and gentlemanlike, and I just wish they would have not given me one. Like, that's the worst. But we think of this word as being weak, and actually, it's the opposite. Kindness is an expression of strength. Unkindness is weakness. Unkindness actually demonstrates a lack of self-control, that something else is actually controlling you. It's a lack of self-awareness. And the truth is most people that are unkind don't even know they're unkind. I got a patient of mine that's the meanest woman I've ever met. She comes in the office and everybody's like, what in the world? And I don't even think she recognizes. She's not here. Thank goodness. Thank you. I feel like I'm on fire today. This is great. But listen to this definition of kindness. It is choosing to loan someone your strength rather than remind them of their weakness. Choosing to loan someone your strength rather than reminding them of their weakness. And listen to this, especially children. Did you know your children already know where they failed? And guess what? The world is reminding them of it every day. It's not just you and I that are in identity crisis. It's not just you and I that are looking for self-worth. Do I measure up? Man, the Bible says this. Do you know this, Mom, that your words weigh 100 pounds? Dads, your words weigh 500 pounds. I don't know why, but they weigh more. Do I measure up? Listen, when we fail, we need to find a way, when they fail, we need to find a way to side with them, not against them, by loaning them our strength. When I was 18 years old, I went to a party I sure shouldn't have went to, for sure. And apparently this guy threw a party that was not on his land. And so lots of cops showed up. And because I was 18, I got, I don't even know if my boys know this story, so this probably isn't a good idea. But I got a ticket. I got a big ticket for trespassing. And I remember giving it to, showing my mom first, because that's the way we did things. But she said, you got to tell your dad. So I remember going to his study. And I'm like, oh, this is not going to be good. And I gave it to him. And his response was, man, I hate that for you. I'm like, what is going on? He said, I'm going to help you. Like, if you turn the ticket over, and there's some direction there for you. Like, this is where you go at this time. And this is what you need to take this money with you. And it was crazy because I was shocked because I thought I was going to be grounded forever. But what he did in that moment is he honored me by allowing me to carry that weight. Right? Man, I'm sorry, but here's the deal. I'm going to walk with you in this. And he did. He went with me to court that day, and my dad loves some Matlock and he loves some Law and Order, so I think it was an opportunity for him to play lawyer, and it really did not turn out well for me at all. But here's what I know, is he was for me and he was with me. You know, thing about punishment, I thought about this week. There's a difference between punishment and discipline. Punishment makes people careful so they don't get caught next time. The message of punishment is that if you don't obey me, bad things will happen to you. Probably not the best motivation. What I challenge you is to side with them side with them in the midst of it, because that's what God did for us, right? And I don't even know if my mom and mom even recognize this, or dad, but I don't ever remember, like, growing up saying, hey, if you do this, this is what's going to happen. It was always, man, I hate that for you. Maybe a little disappointed. So even thinking about, I'm just giving you some, this feels like more like a seminar. You get to take stuff back home with you on Monday. But the idea of what would it look like to side with in the midst of, as opposed to saying, like, if you're punishing, what you're saying is, I actually was counting on you messing up. Like, I knew you were going to do that. Love is kind. It's lending them your strength, not reminding them of their weaknesses. Look what he says next. It doesn't envy, it doesn't boast, it's not arrogant or rude. I think the problem, again, it comes back to self. And I think so many times what we do is we struggle with our own identities. And let me tell you this, it's difficult to celebrate others. It's difficult to celebrate their successes without pointing out something that they could have done better if you're struggling with those things. And some of my biggest faults, I think, as a parent, as a dad, is coach mode, right? Man, the boys play in a game and they do good things, but what do I do at the end of the game? Man, if you could have just done this, if you could have done this or made this play, as opposed to celebrating what they've been successful in. It's hard because we're selfish people. We all think we're the agenda. And then I want to point out one more thing, because I hear stomachs growling. And y'all keep laughing. I'm just going to keep going. I'm kidding. It does not insist on its own way. It's not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice at wrongdoings, but rejoices with truth. You know what he's saying here? Love doesn't dishonor. To live in a culture of honor is to live in a culture of mutual respect. I want you to hear this. Honor actually is superior to obedience. If you look at the Ten Commandments, what does it say? Does it say obey your parents? No. What does it say? Honor your parents. If our goal in raising our kids is simply obedience, you're selling your kids short. You're actually parenting to the lowest common denominator. Catch me if you can, right? You said be home by 9. I didn't know you meant 9 p.m. I thought you meant 9 a.m. You see, so many times obedience becomes the answer to the question. What is the least thing I can do without getting in trouble? Obedience isn't at the heart of every mutual satisfying relationship, but you know what is? Honor. Honor is. Paul talks about it in Romans, right? To be devoted to one another in love and in what? In honor. He even challenges to out-honor each other. If you got a competitive house like that, what would that look like? This is the game we're going to play. We're going to see how you can out-honor your brother. How can we out-honor each other in this church? I'm going to park further down the road than you, right? I remember Sarah early on, not early on, but we had three boys at the time, and it felt like a lot, but she was getting away with her roommates from college, so I had the boys one weekend. I did have some help, so I didn't want it to sound like it was too bad, but it was crazy, and I remember this makes sense to me. Maybe it doesn't make sense to you. You just don't clean in the beginning. Like, there's no need to clean twice. So let's just, if this thing's a Friday through a Sunday, let's just start cleaning about an hour before she gets back, because you're just going to destroy it again. And so I had the boys, and they were like, why are we doing this? And my answer to them is because this makes your mama happy, right? Not because she's going to lose it if she sees this mess. No, because it makes her happy. It's a way to honor her. And this is going to grab you, because we started with this. Mom and dad, you know this, where this begins? It begins with you. Do you honor each other? Did you know that Sarah and I were a family before Easton came into it? We were. Now, sometimes we think that that is the thing that seals it, and that's what actually starts the agenda, that they're the point. But you were a family before that first child. Do you honor each other? Do you put the other person first? Because here's the thing, and this is the point. And I promise we're getting close. Dishonesty, disrespect, the heart of every transgression is a broken relationship, no matter what it is. At the heart of every transgression is a broken relationship. So the goal of discipline is the restoration of the relationship. Discipline should facilitate the restoring of the relationship. Two examples, one in my own life and one that I thought was great, so I'm going to share them. I'm telling all kinds of stories. When I was I think I was in middle school. It was in the summertime. My mom and dad were working, and the neighbor down the road had a pool, and they were on vacation. So it just made sense, right? Like, I'm just going to go get in their pool. And nobody caught me at first. But for some reason, I had something in my pocket with my name on it, and it came out, and it was floating in their pool. Brilliant. And I remember my mom pulling me aside, and she said, Josh, did you go swimming in their pool? And I said, yes. And I was like, waiting for the punishment, and she said, well, here's the deal. You're going to go apologize. And it's not just, I'm sorry. You tell them why you're sorry. You tell them what you did. So it's, I'm sorry for the fact that I trespassed, again trespassing, and swam in your pool without your permission. And then you ask them, listen to this, because you can do this with your kids this week, and it's great, because they're going to say, just give me the punishment. Ask them how you can restore that relationship. What can I do to restore the relationship? And I don't remember what it was. I think they had fun with it for a little bit and told me to go home. And I heard Reverend Stanley use the same example, similar to this. He said his son had disobeyed the mother, dishonored her. It was something he said. I can't remember what it was. And he... This is what he told her. This is what you're going to do. You're going to tell your mom why you're sorry. I'm sorry for being disobedient, or whatever he said. And how can you restore the relationship? And you know what? You know what the mother did? It was brilliant. She said, here's what you're going to do. You're going to take me on a date. And I'm going to pick the restaurant. And you're going to pay for it. And we're going to go on Friday night. And he's like, I hate this. But you know what happened? They still talk about it. And what happened in those 3 hours is the relationship was restored. This isn't no, these aren't new ideas. This is the center of our faith. For we have all sinned and fallen short. We've all broken the relationship with God. Did God come in and punish us? No. I'm not saying that sin doesn't have consequences, but he stepped into our brokenness to fix the relationship. How could we do any less? That's the challenge. I'm going to ask the team to come up. And we're gonna play a song. They're going to sing a song that you may not know the words. I want you to sit where you're at. Application this morning is really simple. I want you to reflect on some things. As a parent, as a grandparent, as of anybody that has any influence over children, youth, I don't care what age they are. Are you patient? Are you walking at their pace? Are you showing kindness? Are you lending them your strengths in the midst of their weaknesses, not reminding them of their weaknesses? Are you honoring them? Is there honor in your house between you and your spouse? Are you honoring, like, it's not just that. Like, are you honoring people that you do life with, that you're in relationship with? They see it. And this is not to create guilt and shame this morning, but what it is it may be this morning that we just need to reach out to someone and say, listen, I'm sorry, and this is what I'm sorry for. I want to restore this relationship, and I'll do whatever it takes to restore the relationship. It may be 20 years in the making. It doesn't matter. And maybe it's just a moment that we need to confess and repent before the Lord today. I pray that we would. I want to end with this. And this is not, this is nothing, I don't, can't remember where I heard it, but it's not necessarily a biblical thing, but I think it is good. What if the most significant thing you do in your life, that thing, may not be a thing? What if the most significant thing you do is the influence you have in a relationship? It's relational. I was listening to a pastor. He said, I've prayed all my life for my kids. And here's what I realized early on. I didn't want kids that were 100% just obedient. He said, I wasn't against it. But I wanted kids that learned how to honor. Because so many times what I've seen with that is they gave me obedience and then they were gone. What I wanted was a relationship, because I wanted to influence them all of their life. And don't we want that? Let's pray. Lord, thank you. Thank you for moms. Thank you for the responsibility and the honor that we get to pour into children's lives and to students' lives and to love. Lord, help us love like you. Lord, help us to love with patience and kindness. Give us opportunities. And Lord, I don't know where we're at this morning, but I pray that if there are relationships that need to be mended, that it would start today. Help us boldly step into that. Forgive us where we failed you. Thank you for loving us first. We ask these things in your precious holy name. Amen.
Thank you for joining for this week's message. Summit Upstate's mission is to give every man, woman, and child the repeated opportunities to see, hear, and respond to the gospel. We'd love to connect with you, so we invite you to reach out to us at summitupstate.org.